This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And it's me, lucky number three, Zach Valenti, at your service.
And today we're joined here, and by here I mean remotely in our homes through the magic of telecommunications, by a special guest here on this episode of No Bad Ideas. He's an actor, a voiceover performer, a television host, one of our favorite performers in the world. It's Mr. Peter Coleman.
Hi. Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me in your interweb space
here. Oh, my gosh. It is so delightful to have you in our series of tubes.
It's great. It's a little cramped, but it's fine. I'm the opposite of a claustrophobic. I like being in tight, confined spaces. Mm-hmm. When I was taken to the beach as a child, I would always dig a hole and bury myself up to the neck. So I feel right at home in your tubes.
Nice. Great.
Is that a claustrophilic?
Let's not dwell on that too much. Let's maybe not think that through all the way through to its logical conclusion.
Yes. My new audio drama, claustrophilic.
Oh no. What have we unleashed?
Well, that's like the first bad idea of today.
I don't get off on it.
Quarantine's favorite podcast.
The bad ideas have started early this week.
You're welcome.
For everyone new around these parts, the purpose of this show is to take some of the, let's call it, historic terribleness of humanity in forms of news stories from around the world and try to turn them into actually decent narratives, whether they're audiobooks, whether they're feature films, TV programs, what have you.
We bring these things to each other. We only have 10 minutes in order to work this miracle of turning bad ideas into good stories. And the hosts who are charged with this task have not heard them before. So Zach, lay on the first one.
I am so delighted to bring you a short but sweet gem from No Bad Ideas long-term supporter, Florida Man.
I'm a big fan of his work.
Oh, man. Yeah.
He's enabled roughly a third, I think, of this show's back catalog.
His reputation truly precedes him. Mm-hmm. So there will be a link in the show notes for anybody who's interested in seeing the glorious photo.
Oh, dear.
And I'm just going to hold on to that. What is it called? The title. And just jump into. Yes, it is illegal to harass manatees. But that didn't stop James Roy Massengale Jr., 47.
They always have three names.
Jumping in an Isomorada, Florida creek in an attempt to make some aquatic friends. When some passing witnesses saw the scene, they informed Massengale it is illegal to harass manatees. Massengale, the Independent reports, clarified his intentions. I'm riding it. And then there is a embedded tweet. You can't make this stuff up. Manatee riding Florida man talks smack to cops, arrested. Surprise. Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation officials arrived to find the man, quote, reaching for, touching, and lying over top of manatees in the creek.
Cool.
Again, informed what he was doing was illegal, Massengale reportedly began chanting, take me to jail, over and over again. Unsurprisingly, officers took him to jail. Massengale's adventure stuck him with a $25,000 bond, mainly for being uncooperative. Mm-hmm. And the title is, Don't Try This at Home, Florida man rides manatee, dares police to arrest him, gets arrested. It's short. It's
headline
sweet.
Really sums it up.
And y'all yeah, really. Have 10 minutes on the clock.
When did this happen?
Yeah, I kind of want to know, did this happen like last week? Did this guy break quarantine to make some aquatic friends?
Oh, no. This is an oldie but a goodie from September 22nd, 2016.
Gotcha. In a more innocent time.
Yes. Yeah.
Indeed. When the world still spun. Okay, so obviously the man was born a manatee and is trying to rejoin his tribe.
To reconnect with the people that he was so cruelly torn away from by that evil witch's spell.
Right. And he was raised as a man cub.
It's like a Mowgli situation.
Right.
I always knew I was different.
I was thinking like Moses, where like he grew up and then realized, oh, these are not my people at all, and was just trying to rejoin them.
But as an aquatic mammal.
As an aquatic, I mean, dolphins are aquatic mammals.
So.
That's true.
Are we the people of the manatee?
I don't know why that's my manatee voice.
Right, so there's kind of like a real... Like, you know, like it's kind of like the reverse of all those stories, like Brother Bear, where it's like man gets turned into animal to learn a lesson. Now you kind of have like animal gets turned into man and has to kind of find a way to earn returning to his prime animal state.
Right. Yeah. Because he realizes that human beings were the lesser species all along.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's a given.
Spoiler.
But what turns him from a manatee cub? I don't know what the term is for baby manatees. Into a human man.
A boyety.
A boyety.
Right.
Like, that's it. All right. Cannon. Have a good night, everyone. This has been No Bad Ideas, brought to you by No.
So Peter, I'm curious. Like, how far does this go? Like, does the manatee literally transform into a human? Is this like an absurdist comedy where everybody looks at this manatee and goes, I see nothing wrong with this picture. Hello, fellow human. And like,
who said it was a comedy?
is this the movie Tusk where they transform a man into
this Herzog involved?
This line of thinking.
This is a body horror. Transmogrifies his own. No, I guess. Okay, fine.
Good story. I said good story.
sorry. All right, then we can do it as a comedy. I feel like all No Bad Ideas stories wind up as comedies because
no. It does tend to happen because that is the easiest way to transform ridiculousness into its more acceptable, socially aware counterpart.
Right.
But I think that like there is absolutely something to like the written by Charlie Kaufman strange existentialist drama of this manatee not being able to convince anyone that it's a manatee and eventually coming to maybe doubt, like kind of,
you know,
maybe I'm not a manatee. Maybe I've been a man all along. Like, what is happening?
If we wanted to, like, go, we shouldn't do this. This is a bad idea. But the sort of common folklore is that sailors crossing the Atlantic in, like, the 16th century, when they saw mermaids, what they were really seeing was manatees. And so you could have like a manatee who is scooped up by a sailor convinced they are a woman and are now trapped in the relationship with this dude and can't convince them that they are in fact an aquatic mammal.
Right, like this is a sailor who's been on the ship for so long that he has lost all semblance of an idea of what a woman looks like.
Right.
Like he just like has no longer any functioning memory of what the, you know, other half of the species
what are the other
are.
Gender?
Like, yeah. I was looking for a mermaid, but I found a beautiful woman.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm a manatee. Not a human woman, nor a fictional fish woman.
Just a fish mammal.
Right.
That is as close as I can get.
So in your story, is the manatee the one trying to return home, or has the sailor started to think that he is also a manatee?
Ooh, I was going to say the former, but I like that.
Oh my God.
Right, like the manatee makes such an articulate, convincing case that the guy's kind of like, wow, I never thought of it
you're
that
right.
way.
I guess I'm a manatee too.
Plot twist, the manatee's voice was all in his head the whole time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Is this just like the manatee version of that Twilight Zone episode where everybody's like all the people that think they're disfigured are actually the handsome people?
Oh yeah, I have the beholder.
Yeah, and then all the people that look normal are actually like, you know, got like weird lip face.
Oh, she's hideous.
Right, yeah.
Right, but...
because we have pig faces, and she doesn't have a pig face. And so she's ugly.
Now it's like, wait, we're all manatees. Jeez.
I really, really like the idea of you do this the entire movie, and it is sort of this very surreal thing about these guys talking to this manatee, and the manatee convincing them that they are actually manatees too. And at the end, like, you know, after they've all thrown themselves overboard and we can only presume drowned.
Yeah.
Just like a text comes up that is like, this was a movie about the dangers of drinking seawater. Don't do it.
This is something that like Paul Dano or Elijah Wood would absolutely star in.
Wait. I have the extra plot twist. Uh-huh. Like maybe after the credits roll via like a Marvel-esque stinger, we pull out on a therapist giving advice to the patient who has been recounting this awful ordeal that they've gone through, like thinking that it's all real. And then we finally turn the camera around to reveal that it's not the man, it's the manatee.
Ah, right. Goes to like a real BoJack Horseman place.
There we go.
Really got messed up in there. Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. No.
Is this live action? Is this animation? I think it kind of has to be animation, right?
I think you have to lean in and do it live action.
Oh, absolutely.
With an elaborate puppet created by the Jim Henson Company.
By the Jim Henson Company.
To be the manatee.
There we go. Okay.
I feel like ILM could pull this off.
Well, what about
maybe, that's true. That's true.
Like new Jungle Book / new, what is the Lion's King? Like the way that animation where it kind of looks real, but it's also like totally animated.
Get Favreau to do it.
Yeah.
Who is voicing the manatee? Who is acting opposite Paul Dano and or Elijah Wood as the sailors?
Paul Dano and or Elijah Wood.
Oh, God.
No, that's not how that should
that's
work.
A strong choice. That could, I mean.
No. Hmm. Who's actually
What about Seth Rogen?
Boom.
Ooh,
perfect.
I can see him as a really good manatee.
Hey, man, I think you're a little confused.
His career has been leading up to that point. Yeah.
I'm a sea creature. If you could just let me off at the next port.
So that's pretty good.
Let's recap a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So movie begins. You're on a boat and you're like, okay, so this is going to be a movie about some guys on a boat and like how hard it is to be a sailor in the 16th century, I suppose. Then they scoop up a manatee. And they're like, my God, this is the most beautiful woman that I've ever seen. And you and the audience are kind of going like, oh, God, it's going to be a movie about this. Then the manatee starts to talk and starts to, with Seth Rogen's voice, try to convince them that, no, you are mistaken, sirs. I am not a woman. At this point, you no longer know what to think in the movie theater. Like, you know, the path of this ball has now gotten completely curved. However, nothing in the proceeding prepares you for the point in which after multiple Frost-Nick-style conversations in which this manatee is pleading its case, all with the voice of Seth Rogen, it eventually arrives at the point when the two sailors played by Elijah Wood and Paul Dano start looking at each other and start kind of going, man, they're making some pretty good points. I think that we're actually all manatees. The movie now turns into Seth Rogen trying to convince them again, kind of like, no, you've got it all. That, okay, so we've overcorrected. You need to scale it back a little bit. You need to kind of like bring it back before finally arriving at the point where his original arguments were just so fucking persuasive that the sailors throw themselves overboard and the manatee's just like, you know what? Fuck it. I tried.
And the manatee then takes control of the ship.
I suppose.
Yeah,
either
and
that
sails
or they
on
home to get a lot of therapy
in the last 10 seconds.
I mean, now they have a ship.
What's it called?
The dangers of seawater. Just like, what does it say on the tin?
And that's time.
Oh.
Yeah. Manatee and the sea? No, the old manatee and the sea.
The old manatee and the sea.
That's good. I like that. I like that a lot.
Oh, that's great.
Manatees search for meaning.
Wow.
The Viktor Frankl unpublished nightmare. I'm sorry.
A manatee for all seasons.
Well, I am delighted with what you did with that very, very, very small seed and how it's blossomed into such a disturbing plant.
I think we've got a real winner here.
I'm glad that we got away from Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Said literally everyone who moved away from Florida.
We love you, Florida.
Well, we're going to not go to Florida, but go to a break and be back really soon.
Hey y'all, Sarah here with a quick message before we get back to the next bad idea. If you're anything like Gabrielle, Zach, and I, right now maybe you could use some more content to listen to as you go about your day and try to stay sane. And we have something for you. We can recommend another fantastic podcast that we think you should check out. It's called Outliers, Stories from the Edge of History. And it's produced by Historic Royal Palaces and our friends at Rusty Quill. The idea behind the show is really simple. Every episode, you get a new story from a forgotten corner of history. If you tune in, you'll hear stories about spies, codebreakers, scientists, pirates, executioners, sorcerers, soldiers, even a royal zookeeper. And it's all written by a team of award-winning writers. There's two full seasons out right now, so that's 20 stories for you to listen to. And you can do that by searching for Outliers, Stories from the Edge of History in your podcatcher of choice, or you can just go direct to rustyquill.com/outliers. All right, let's get back to the bad ideas. All right, y'all. Welcome back to another round of the No Bad Ideas game with our very special guest, Peter Coleman.
Hi.
Ooh, ooh, ooh,
ooh. Aw.
Well, now that we have survived that, I was going to make a whale of a tail joke, but it doesn't really work with manatees. I'll think about it.
Still almost made me snort my tea, even though it doesn't work.
I have a doozy of an idea from r/relationships, our friends over at Reddit.
Oh, boy.
This is one of those. I'm just like 50-50. It's made up and is written for artistic effect, but also could be very real.
Okay.
So the post begins, "Hello. With all that is going on, we have stocked up on supplies, including some canned goods. I ordered a few weeks ago 30 cans of beans. 10 are black beans, 10 are kidney beans, and 10 are pink beans. Also, I ordered 15 cans of chickpeas. I thought this is a reasonable amount of beans and chickpeas to have every now and then and would last for quite some time. However, last night, I opened the cabinet because I wanted to make a vegetarian chili using 2 cans of beans, but all of the beans were gone. What the hell? I asked my girlfriend, and she told me she had buried all of the beans in the woods."
Wait, what?
What?
Yep.
That was not where I expected that to go at all.
Please, I'm confused.
Tell me it's not, and like, tell me it's not for the reason I think it is.
Well, at first I thought she was joking, but then she explained, no, she had buried the beans in the woods. What the fuck? I asked
her. Do they live close by to the woods, or did she like have to get in a car and drive somewhere?
It's unclear. It's unclear how close they are to actual woods.
Okay.
I asked her to explain, and she told me she was afraid that, quote, if things get bad, we might have to worry about looters or whatever, and that the beans would be in danger of being stolen.
What the fuck?
I said God. I thought that was completely ridiculous and unlikely. She became angry at me and said she is, and I, this is a direct quote, protecting our beans.
This is one of these like forehead tapping meme things of like, you know, ah, they can't take the beans if the beans are already gone.
I'm not going to lie. That's actually a genius idea compared to what I thought it was going to be, which is that she was trying to grow bean tree.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Or a magic beanstalk.
Right. That's funny. I was curious where your mind went with that, Peter, because I definitely was thinking more Mad Max. Insurance.
Well, according to her logic, the beans are safely buried in the woods behind our apartment complex, so they can't be like too close to the woods. And if we ever need some beans, she will go to the stash and dig up a can or two, but would prefer if we save them all for when things get worse. I said, why only bury the beans? Why not bury our more valuable items? She said the canned food was the most valuable for long-term means. And that's since we get fresh food in our online grocery deliveries, it would make sense to continue to stockpile beans.
Okay.
She intends to go bury more beans in the woods each week.
Once we hit that bean-based economy, is going to be the most clutch move.
Like, I mean, the apocalypse economy is similar to the prison economy. You got to trade in non-perishables.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You know, it's stuff's worth its weight in gold.
This was too insane for me, and I got very upset. I demanded to know where the beans were buried, and she refused to tell me.
Holy shit!
She said if I knew, she was afraid I'd dig them up, and I said, damn right I would. She said,
what the fuck?
I crossed a line, and she said, and said she was out of her mind. She stormed away. We have not talked since last night. I think it is completely ridiculous to bury the beans in the woods, and I want to find them and dig them up. But apparently, my girlfriend is taking this very seriously. How can I convince her to tell me where the beans are? That's my favorite sentence.
My God.
And how do you think I can convince her to get therapy or something? Or should I break up with her? So confused. Is this normal for a girlfriend to bury beans or otherwise hide them? TLDR, my girlfriend buried the beans in the woods and will not tell me where they are.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is maybe not a relationship that should continue.
No. Except for the fact that there are beans on the line, Urbina.
Well, I'm going to put 10 minutes on the clock, and you can tell me just how much this hill of beans is worth.
Well, there are so many directions to take this.
I know.
And I think we can all agree that it depends on whether or not the, who was in Taken?
Liam Neeson?
The Liam Neeson impersonator business is an essential service or not. Because if it is, which it should be, get yourself a Liam Neeson to get those beans back for you.
I have one set of very specific skills.
I find beans.
Burying beans in the woods.
I'm going to find you. I'm going to dig you up, and I'm going to make you into a vegetarian chili.
No, but so, Peter, what were some of the directions that presented themselves in your mind?
First and foremost, I think the beans are haunted.
Okay. Okay, haunted beans.
I love it.
I think they're haunted beans, or it's like it's a psychological thriller. Like again. Mm-hmm. The haunting beans are in her head. Maybe it's a Macbeth, out damn beans, out.
Ah, yes.
There's some force compelling her to hide these
Who
beans.
Who knew that
Clearly,
the can had so much beans in them?
Right. There's more to this than a hill of beans.
Right. Like maybe this is done from the girlfriend's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of like start to like, you know, see the day when, like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they're stockpiling beans in her house, and all of a sudden she hears a voice that is like, April, get more beans. Get more beans. You need to keep them safe. And it's sort of like her slow descent into, like, first resisting and then giving into this voice.
And I think that comes along because, so they've been quarantined for so long and she's going a little crazy. And maybe the boyfriend, he doesn't just go to the store and buy beans. No, no, no. He stumbles upon someone else trying to bury their stash who like dies or like gets knocked out of the picture. And he comes across these beans like, oh my God, this is amazing, honey. Look what I found. But he doesn't realize he's bringing home haunted beans.
I love it. I love that. You know, it's like one of those, like, what a find. You would not believe, like, what I found some nut to doing. And then he happened to exit pursued by a bear. I think he's dead now. But, you know, now I have the beans. And, like, why would you want to bury these things?
They're great.
And then half a movie later, she starts to be like, you got to bury the beans, man. You got to do it. You got to bury them. Got to bury them 6 foot deep, you know, with elm and rowanwood on top of them. Like, it's the only way to keep them safe.
And every time he opens a can and eats them, right? She doesn't want to touch him. She won't eat him. But every time he does, he starts to appear different to her. Like some part of his body becomes morphed or disfigured,
right,
or like looks like rotting flesh is falling off.
All right, yeah, he's slowly turning into a tree or something.
It's like a little bit at first, like to the mm-hmm. point that like maybe the audience isn't even sure if they're seeing it too.
But he
by
never
like the
does.
Third can, it's like, yeah, no, his eyes are different or something.
Yeah, and his eyes go black or something like that.
Yeah.
Oof. Oh, so is this a case where, is this going to be straight horror where...
Obviously, it's a college humor comedy.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course.
No,
I was going to say where like the dude transforms into a giant bean monster and she needs to run away, or can he be saved?
Well, I think that it's kind of a matter of, I think the thing to decide there is kind of what is the horror coming from? Because I think that we've all kind of like zeroed in on there is actually some kind of supernatural curse on these mm-hmm. beans, but is the magic that he is actually turning into this monster and he can't see it? Or is the magic that it's all in her eyes and like he's actually fine and she's just seeing him for something that he isn't?
Mm.
The obvious and realistic answer is that it's all in her mind. In order to make the movie have a successful ending, you have to leave it open-ended.
Sure.
I don't think that's a question we can actually answer, but just make the audience ask more questions.
Right. In that case, then I think that it needs to kind of end with like her full descent into madness as she kind of like runs out of the house carrying the beans into the woods and, you know, keeps trying to find a place to bury them. But she is stalked first by her boyfriend. But eventually she realizes, no, that's not my boyfriend. That is whatever the real owner of these beans is.
Oh my gosh. Can she be saved at the very, very end by the prepper from the start? And he's like, oh my God, thank goodness someone has, I've been looking for these beans everywhere. They're so dangerous. And this is all just a meet cute.
Right. Like that guy that's is basically like the people at the end of Jumanji that is like, I've been through hell and I'm burying these things so that no one else, mm-hmm. you know, runs into them. I like that. That's good.
I don't know if it's too early in the podcast, but I've come up with the name for the movie.
Ooh,
and you
it's never too early.
It, Gabrielle. Bean stalked.
Oh, shit.
I love it.
That's perfect.
That's perfect.
I was thinking about bean puns. That's so good.
Oh.
I was like, is it a hill of beans? Is anybody full of beans?
Right. Beaned.
Yeah. Beanstalked.
Beanstalked. Perfect.
Beanstalked. I love it. That's great.
All right.
Wow. Beanstalked 4, the outer space one, is really going to revitalize the franchise's box off viability.
That's great.
It's planting season.
Oh, no.
I hate it. Well, you have about 3 minutes left.
We already come up with the movie. What's this?
I think we're moving on to the Mars-based bean franchise.
No, I think that now it's like, you know, like Beanstalk 2, because everything that like gets buried sprouts sooner or later.
It's springtime.
Beanstalk 5, nothing stays buried.
Yeah, no,
what happens to the boyfriend? Does anything bad actually happen to the boyfriend?
One moment. That's the title of the sequel, Beanstalk 2, Harvest Time.
Oh no.
I think he dies.
Okay, cool.
I think that in the sort of full curse craze, as she tries to get away from the apartment, thinking that he is fully transformed into a supernatural monster.
She's kind of like reverse down. Midsommar. I like it.
Kind of, yeah.
Bit meets The Fly. Like I can imagine, like Jeff Goldblum sort of like slowly turning throughout the movie.
Oh, Oh, I just searched for Midsommar. Oh God,
no,
Zach, don't do it.
I was totally thinking this movie had Midsommar. I don't want to say Midsommar.
I didn't
vibes,
realize my brain could vomit its mouth.
Yeah,
it can.
Oh boy,
be careful with your Google, kids. It's a powerful but dangerous tool.
What did you find, Zach?
Don't worry about it.
Just don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
A very gross face. So my question is, does the boyfriend die in the way that I think it was the Freddy Krueger movies with Jack Sparrow, because I'm terrible with names.
Johnny Depp.
The one where like the mattress like sucks him in like a blender. Like, does the can of beans just like eat the boyfriend?
Ooh.
Or is there?
I think if it's psychological horror, she kills him.
Okay.
But if there is actually something magical to the beans, which I think there would need to be for this to be a franchise, and I'm all about the franchise, then maybe the beans do eat him. I don't know.
However, I do like the idea, though, of like there's like a friend or someone that like comes by. Maybe they're like some kind of essential worker, and that's the only reason why they're able to still be in mobility. Maybe it's their next door neighbor. And he kind of starts to notice what's happening, and he's just about to help her. He's just about to kind of like break through when all of a sudden, yeah, like vines sprite out from the ground and suck them down, and they're just gone. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of those first moments when, like, as an audience, you realize like, okay, no, there is something fucked up going on here. It's not just all in her mind.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it.
I think that that's how you get your Nightmare on Elm Street death.
I don't know. I feel like maybe she, in a moment of panic and in an explosive moment, she bludgeons him to death with cans of beans. And then when she leaves the scene, the cans, they move in.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, there's just more cans of beans.
That's time.
And nobody.
So just to be clear, Zach, you're saying that she beans him on the head?
She beans him in just the right spot.
That's right.
I'm going to go now.
Well, I am impressed with the idea, yes, but really with the level of puns.
With just like the commitment to the puns.
Oh, yeah. Excellent stuff, guys. This is great.
What are you pulling my legume?
Bean fiends.
I'm going to go.
Well, I think we should end the show now.
I think that's enough for everyone. Yes.
It's been a good run.
Like, end this show forever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This has been no bad ideas.
Really, really honored. This has been no more bad ideas.
There we go.
Was no honored, bad ideas.
Honored I could be a part of her final run. Thank you so much for having me.
No,
thank
Peter,
you so much
thank
for
you
being here.
So much for being here. Yes, it's been an absolute delight.
My pleasure. Truly, this has been great. Thank you so much for having me on this show.
And don't worry, dear listeners, we'll get to talk a little bit more with Peter on our Thursday episode. So stay tuned for that coming up right later this week.
You thought you could get rid of us that easily. No bad ideas, audience. But these beans are here to stay. This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Rena Sarame and Jennifer Schneider. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.